Hey, so we are picking up a Neir session on Samech Hey. Top line, Tanya. Tanya, if someone makes a neder not to get benefit from his friend, so what's the halacha? So what says, interesting halacha. That you could only if so. The case over here is the following: I'm making a neder not to get benefits from someone. Yeah, if you look at the Rush, he writes over here: Perish Harav Eliezer Mimitz Shenadra Ladas Chaveiro Ein Matirin Lo Ela Befanav. So we'll say, and here Tosus also points out Shenadra Befanav Shlo Yenemimeno. So the case over here is I'm making a neder not to get benefits from someone. So whether it's I'm making a neder not to get benefits from someone, or I'm making a neder that has an impact on another individual. So the Braisa says that Hataras Nedarim, if I want to revoke that vow, revocation of that vow should only happen in the presence of the other, meaning of the person who was impacted or affected by the neder. So the Gemara says, what do we know this from? Amar Rav Nachman Dichsiv, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe b'Midyan, because Yibon Shom said to Moshe Rabbeinu while he was in Midyan, Lech Shuv Mitzrayim, was what we quoted yesterday. Go back to Egypt. Because all the people, because all the people who wanted to kill you, remember we spoke yesterday as a reference to Dasan Abiram, are now dead. Now, what does this have to do with anything? Amarlo, the Ribon Shom says to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Midyan Nadarta, you made a neder in Midyan. That was, so we're going to see in just a moment that Moshe Rabbeinu made a neder to Yisro, that he was not going to leave Midian. We spoke about this yesterday. And therefore, because you made a neder ultimately to Yisro, and that neder had an impact on Yisro, because again, it allowed Yisro to know that you and his daughter Tzipporah were remaining in Midian. Therefore, if we're now going to revoke that neder, remember, we'll say yesterday, this story was brought up by Rabbi Eliezer as being the biblical proof text to the idea that what? That no lud, new circumstances, is a license for Hataras Nedarim. So says the Gemara, so Amla b'Midyan Nadarta, you made your neder in Midyan, the Hater Nadarcha b'Midyan, and therefore again, or Nedarcha b'Midyan, therefore, you must go ahead and be Matir the neder in Midyan as well. Now also, now where do we see this? Dichsiv, where do we see the Moshe who made a neder in Midyan? Dichsiv, Vayoel Moshe. As the Moshe, the Pasuk says, Vayoel Moshe Lasheves Esaish, Moshe Rabbeinu Vayoel. Now we'll have to see what that means in just a moment. But Moshe Rabbeinu Vayoel to still dwell with the man over here is Yisro. Vayitin es Tziporah bito l'Moshe, and he gave Tziporah his daughter to Moshe Rabbeinu as a wife. So what does it mean Vayoel Moshe? Ein Allah el lashon shvuah. So Rabbi says, so Allah Vayoel Moshe means that Moshe Rabbeinu made an oath. So again, remember before we go on over here, what the Gemara's understanding is Vayoel Moshe means Moshe Rabbeinu made an oath to Yisro that he was going to dwell in Midyan. Therefore, the Ribono Shel Olam says, okay, now there's new circumstances. You have to go back to Mitzrayim. But what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu? Vayomer Hashem Moshe b'Midyan. If you want to be Matir the Neder, so to speak, you have to what? You have to do it in Midyan, in the presence of Yisrael. Because since you made a Neder, ultimately that impacts and has ramifications upon another, therefore revocation could only take place in the presence of the other as well. So the Gemara says that Ein Allah Ela Lashon Shvuah. How do we know that Allah is a Lashon of Shvuah? Listen to this. Dichsiv, because the Pasuk says, and this is really interesting. So the Pasuk says, Vayave Oso Ba'Allah. The Pasuk says that he brought him, literally Vayave Oso Ba'Allah, he brought him in with a vow, or brought him in with an oath. Now what is this referring to? Vaygam B'melech Nebuchadnezzar Marad, Asher Hishpio be'elokim chayim. I will say, listen to this. The pasuk that the Gemara just quoted was the first pasuk, was from Yechezkel. And the pasuk is talking about that he brought him in with an oath. We'll see who the him is in just a moment. The next pasuk the Gemara quoted was from Divrei Hayyamim. And that pasuk the Gemara says, of the Navi says, the Gam b'melech Nebuchadnezzar marad, he rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar. We'll discuss who the he is in just a moment. He rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar is the king or the emperor of the Babylonian Empire, destroyer of the first Beis HaMikdash, Asher Yishpio Be'elokim, because Nebuchadnezzar made him take an oath with his God. So what is this talking about? My Marduse, what are we talking about? What rebellion What going against an oath are we referring to over here? Listen to this story. Ashkechet Tzidkiah leNebuchadnezzar. So it's like King Chizkiah found Nebuchadnezzar, Dehava ka'achal arnava. He was eating a live rabbit. Eating a live rabbit. So mamash son of Nebuchadnezzar, they're just engaging in a barbaric act of, and of course, again, remember, Nebuchadnezzar is the king, which means a very powerful, the most powerful man on the face of the earth in his time. So obviously, every delicacy was at his disposal. But he's engaging over here in some barbaric behavior, like eating a live rabbit. So Zidkiyo sees this. So what happens? Arale ishtaba li vilo miglas iluye vilo sefek milsa. So Nebuchadnezzar makes Zidkiyo, take an oath that he will not reveal what he just saw. Because what Nebuchadnezzar understood is if word about this would get out, people would look at him as a barbarian, right? As an animal. So he made Zidkiyo swear that Zidkiyo wouldn't say anything. Fine, ishtaba, Zidkiyo swore. L'sof hava kamitzta'er Zidkiyahu bigufei. This is actually quite interesting. So at the end, Zidkiyo actually suffered from physical pain from keeping the secret bottled up inside. You see, what Zidkiyahu felt over here was that potentially he had an opportunity to undermine Nebuchadnezzar's rule. Because perhaps, again, if everybody would see that this guy is mamash a behemoth, he's mamash a barbarian, that maybe, again, it would release his hold on Eretz Yisrael and on the other vassal states. So therefore, again, Mamish is burning up inside him until literally he's sick over keeping it in. Ishul Ashavuse. So what happens? He goes to the Sanhedrin, as we're going to see, and ultimately he has his oath annulled. So Va'amar, and he begins, and Zidkiyahu begins to tell people about what he saw Nebuchadnezzar do. Shamu Nebuchadnezzar to come Vazimlay. So Nebuchadnezzar, word gets back to Nebuchadnezzar, that his subjects are disparaging him, saying, talking about the seven so where he consumed the live rabbit. So Shalach va'aisi Sanhedrin with Zidkiyo. So he ordered that the Sanhedrin and Zidkiyo, the king, ultimately appear before him. Amar lahon chazisun mai ka'avet Zidkiyo. So he says to the Sanhedrin, do you see what Zidkiyo did? Meaning Zidkiyo made an oath not to reveal that which he saw, and yet he went back on the oath. Amar lahon Chazis, I'm sorry. Amar lahom chazis umayka avet Zidkiyo. So lav hachi ishtaba b'shmei d'shmaya d'lo maglina. Did Zidkiyo not take an oath, went with the name of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, that he was not going to reveal that which he saw? Amrulei, so the Sanhedrin responded to Nebuchadnezzar, itshalei ashvu asa. He had his vow revoked. Not vow, his oath. He had his oath revoked. Amrulei. Amrulei. So listen to this. So I'm sorry, I read that wrong. So Nebuchadnezzar said that he had his oath revoked. So Amrulei in. The Sanhedrin responded, yes, he had the oath revoked. Amrulehu, befanav, o afilu shelo befanav. So listen to this. So this he asked them, so Nebuchadnezzar said, tell me, if you make an oath that has an impact upon other people, do you have to revoke the oath in front of the person who would impact or not? The Sanhedrin responded, oh, in front of the person. So Amr Le Bifarav, Amr Lahon, Va'asun Mai Aviratun. My time alo Amrisun Letzidkiyo. So Nebuchadnezzar gives them Halachik Musar. Nebuchadnezzar says, you pass in the wrong way. Right? Meaning you just said that whenever you take an oath that impacts another, ultimately the only way to revoke that oath is to do so in the presence of the person whom the oath impacts. Here, Zidkiyo took an oath with the name of God that impacts me. And again, if you were going to revoke it, you should have demanded that he do so in my presence. So what happens? Miyad, yashvu la'aretz yidmu ziknei basiyon. So we'll say in that moment, literally, yashvu la'aretz yidmu ziknei basiyon. They sat on the ground and they were silent. The elders of the daughter of Zion. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, sheshamtu kari mitachtayem. That Nebuchadnezzar literally took the cushions out from under them. In other words, that Nebuchadnezzar was terribly displeased with what the Sanhedrin did, and therefore again took away their chairs, took away their cushions literally, and made them sit on the floor. So this story itself is interesting. Now, of course, what's fascinating about this is, so why, first of all, he didn't kill them, right? Although later on, certainly Nebuchadnezzar does kill out most of the Sanhedrin, and he also goes ahead and punishes Sidkio very severely. Again, it's interesting that he doesn't punish them right then and there, but okay, I don't know. So what I said, just point out to you, if you look at the Ran, so look at the last short line in the Ran. So right after the period, it's the second word on the line. So let's listen to this. So the idea, so here's the shayla. So leaving aside the interesting story, so if indeed the halacha is that when you take a neder that impacts someone else, you can only revoke that neder in their presence, so then what? There's a shayla, which is what? So how did the Sanhedrin, how were they matir Sidkio's oath without the Nebuchadnezzar being present? So it could be the Jewish piece. Could be that maybe it's just the din in Jews. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that this case is just so off the map, you know, so off the radar that it just doesn't fit into normative frameworks. But look what, but the Ran instead sees something else. He says, so in fact, what the Ran says, what you see from this story is that if you take a neder that impacts someone else, or I should say, well, I'm using neder, but the truth is it's neder shvua. But if you take a neder or a shvua that impacts someone else, if you are going to annul or to revoke that neder or shvua, it should be done in the presence of the person it impacts, which I will say just intuitively makes sense. Why? Because if I'm saying something that impacts you, and now I'm revoking that statement, it's important that you know about it. So what the Ran sees is l'chatchila that is true, but the eved, even if you revoked the vow or the oath without the knowledge or the presence of the other, the revocation is still valid. And says the Ran, that's actually the point of the story. The point of the story is that even if the affected party is not present, although the chatchila we'd like them to be present, but the revocation is still valid. So he says, akati kasha. I'm at the end of the first line, wide line of the Ran. Akati kasha. Then he did the eved shari lechatchila mihu aser. Vehechi sharlei sanhedrin and sidkio. Okay, so fine. Even if you want to say lechatchila, you could revoke the vow or the oath without the presence of the other. I'm sorry. Bidi eved, you could revoke the vow or the oath without the presence of the other. But why would the Sanhedrin do this? Meaning, why wouldn't they just keep Sidkio bound to his oath? To it, Bahachi, Behechi, Sharle, Sanhedrin, Sidkio. See, Ikalameimar, the Ran says, Dilidavar, Dilidvar Mitzvah, Matirin. Oh, I will say the exception could be for Dvar Mitzvah. So when the revocation of the vow of the oath is considered to be a mitzvah in nature, so by definition, we will allow revocation even without the lechatchila, even without the presence of the affected party. This is so interesting. So apparently, you know, when the Gemara says that Sidkiyahu was mamish like sick over this, that's not, you know, Talmudic hyperbole. The Ran seems to be, you know, like mamish, like, you know, you can see that sometimes people do get, you know, a person could get physically sick over having to keep something bottled up inside. So literally he was a mess as a result of keeping in this secret, and he was unable to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu properly. It's interesting enough, so the Ran seems to say, so also what the Ran takes from the story is the following. L'chatchila, if you make a neder that impacts someone else, or a shvua for that matter, if you're going to revoke the neder or the shvua, then ultimately that revocation should take place in the presence of the affected party. Bidi eved, even if revocation took place not in the presence of the affected party, the revocation is still valid. However, it appears that when there's a divine mitzvah, when there's a mitzvah element in the revocation, when there's a mitzvah need or a mitzvah mandate in the revocation, the lechatchila, that revocation could take place even not in the presence of the other. Fine, says the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir Omer. So Rabbi Meir says, Yesh Dvarim Shehin Kinolad, Ve'inan Kinolad. There are things in Rabbi say that there are circumstances that look like Nolad circumstances, and therefore will be grounds for the revocation or dissolution of a neder, but in fact they're not Nolad. Now, before we go on with this, it's important to revisit something we had yesterday. So remember again, yesterday in the Mishnah, we were introduced to the concept of Nolad. So what does Nolad mean? That if I make a neder, and now new circumstances come about that were not present at the time of the neder, so what's the halacha? So Rabbi Eliezer says that's grounds for dissolution or actually revocation of the neder. So remember the examples he gave. I make a neder, I'm not going to get any benefit from Reuven, and then what happens? Reuven becomes a sofer. He's the only sofer in my town, and I need to get my tefillin fixed. So Rabbi Eliezer says these are new circumstances that came, and if I say, had I know that Reuven was going to become a sofer, I would have never made the neder. That's grounds for revocation of the neder. The Chachamim disagree, and the Chachamim say that no, but new circumstances is not grounds for revocation of the neder. So I just want to point out to you for a moment, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Chav Tes, Sif Yud Beis writes, Ein poschin ela bedavar hahover v'ragil d'shchiach tuva. And we'll say, the only thing you could create a Pesach for revocation for a neder are circumstances that are in existence and normative. About ein poschin b'melsa d'lo shchiach tuva. But you cannot create an opening for revocation with circumstances that are uncommon. Kegon, im amar konem she'eni nana l'ploni she'en nechaz l'beis ploni, Benasa also plenty time to call shakol tzvich and lo also bias nasa besak neses ein poschen lo lomar ilia dat shiasa plenty time to call also bias nasa besak neses lo hayisin oder the fish I de pesach ne akar and adem ekar pesach ze eino oklo shafim hayimala also alibo lo hayin in the bishom and the kemelo shiach tuba. So let's listen to this. So the idea the Shulchan Aruch says is you could only create a Pesach for circumstances if these are the type of foreseeable circumstances that one could have had in mind at the time they made the nether. But if the circumstances are so out of the norm, then ultimately, again, those do not create a Pesach ultimately for revocation of the nether. That's just an important yisod. Therefore, again, there is the concept of being able to create a Pesach, an opening for a nether with new information, but it has to be the type of new information that there was an expectation that such things could come up. It's just the person didn't think about them at the time of the neder. But if the new circumstances are so wild and so unforeseen that a person would have never had them in mind at the time of the neder, then those are not grounds for revocation. Remember, we actually saw this yesterday in the rush. The logic behind this is the following. When there are new circumstances, and I want to say, had I known these circumstances at the time I made the neder, I would have never made the nether. They have to be the type of circumstances that one could have potentially thought of at the time of the nether, but it just happens to be that I didn't think of them. But if the circumstances are so out of the norm, they're so wild, that a person would have never even thought to have these kind of circumstances in mind at the time of the nether, then what? Then those are not grounds for dissolution. So for example, if I go ahead and I say I'm making a nether not to get benefit from Reuven, and then what happens? And turn it out, to use the Gemara's example, that Reuven becomes a sofer. So the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins is that will not be a valid Pesach. Why? That will not be a valid opening for revocation of the nether. Why? Because the truth is, even if someone would have told me at the time of the nether, well, what happens if Reuven becomes a sofer? I would have said to them, what? That's ridiculous, right? I would have never had that possibility in mind. Therefore, because I would have never had that possibility in mind, therefore, it cannot create grounds for the opening of a nether, for the revocation. So what the Mishnah, now back to the Mishnah. So Rameer is saying like this, there are circumstances that look like no-lud circumstances, but they're not really no-lud circumstances. Therefore, they are sufficient grounds for revocation of the nether. For example, the Ein Chacham Modon, Chacham don't agree with him. What are the cases? Ketzad. Amar Konim Isha Konim Shanino says Ponis Sha'aviha Ra. Let's say I say, you know what? I'm very interested in marrying this girl, but I'm not going to because her father is evil. Her father is evil. Amrulo Mace Oshinasa Tshuva. And then what happens? Shoko. Right? So what happens? Or you can go ahead and say, I can say that what? Then they tell me, look, her father died, or he did tshuva. So we'll say, so what happens? So what does Rabbi Meir say in this case? Rabbi Meir says in this case, oh, that's what? That's when I saw, now I would be released from my vow. Next case, I'm not entering into that house because there's a rabid dog that lives inside. Oh, shanachash besocho, or because there's a snake inside. And they say to me, no, meisakelev, oh, shaharaganachash. Don't worry about it. The dog is dead. The snake is dead. These look like nolad circumstances, but yet the eino kinolad, but they're not really nolad. And if Rabbi Meir says these would be valid grounds ultimately for revocation of the vow, the ein chachamim odlo, but the chachamim do not agree. Well, let's take a look at the Ran for just one moment. The Ran says, "Yish tovarim shein kinolad ve'inon kinolad, l'fishu kitola nidra b'davar, t'cheivan davar shavi ara, mashma kol zman shavi ara." Well, l'fichach kishemeis o asat shuva shayet. So we'll say, as we're going to see in the Gemara, what Rabbi Meir is really saying is, in these type of nedarim, it's quite clear that I'm making my neder dependent on certain things. So, for example, I would marry this girl, except her father is evil. Which, so the inference from that is that if the father would not be an issue, I would marry this girl. That's the inference from it. Therefore, if the father dies or the father does tshuva, ultimately Rabbi Meir says, now that looks like nolad. It looks like nolad because there are new circumstances, but it's not really nolad. Really, what I'm doing is I'm making a neder that is predicated on very specific circumstances, which then says that what? That if the circumstances change, then ultimately the neder is void, says the Gemara.
Why is it not like that?
I'm sorry?
How is it not?
Because nolad means unforeseen circumstances that come up that was never built into the body of the neder. This, it's almost like, it's really almost like a tnai. It's really almost like a conditional neder. I'm just not articulating it as a condition. I'm stating the reason for the neder. So therefore, by definition, Rabbi Meir says, once the reason changes, so the neder ultimately becomes void. Oh, so that we're going
to
see. So konim, shani nichnas labayit zeshakelev, mace. So Gemara says, mace. No, I don't understand. So let's take this case. I'm making a neder. I'm not going to enter into this house because there's a rabid dog in it. So now what is the Gemara? What did the Mishnah? What did Rabbi Meir say? If the dog dies, I can enter into the house. Fine. So, but mace, dog dying is nola. That's a new circumstance. So we'll say, listen to this. Amar Rav Huna, na'ase ketola nidra b'davar. So we'll say, so Rav Huna says that this is like what? These cases are like you are hinging your neder on a specific event. In other words, that Rav Huna says the cases in the Mishnah are really, they're not nola. They're like a case of tanai, like a case of condition. We'll say, if you look at the Rana for just a moment, na'asai ketola nidro b'davar, ki depreshis, u'mishum haki shari afilu below she'ilas chacham. Oh, so we'll say, according to Rav Huna would say that if I say I'm not going into this house because there's a rabid dog inside, and they tell me that what? The dog is dead. Rav Huna will say the neder is void. The neder is voided even without going to a Talmud Chacham. Why? Because it's as if I made the neder al tanai with the condition. The condition is I'm not going to go into this home as long as there's a rabid dog in there. And therefore, once the dog is dead, the neder is void. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kvar Meis Kvar Asa Tshuva Kam Relay. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no. The case is different. The case in the Mishnah actually is where what? I went ahead, I made this neder. I'm not going to enter into this home because there's a rabid dog. Or I'm not going to marry this girl because her father is a Rasha. And Rabbi Yochanan says, what's the case? The case is where they tell me, no, the father already died. Or the dog was already dead. Look at the Ran. Rabbi Yochanan kvar meis kvar asa tshuva kamrinon. Kilomar shemeis kodem nidro v'havi le neder tos. Oh. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the case of the Mishnah of Asa is where what? You know why the neder is void? Because it was a mistaken neder. Because at the time that I made the neder, I didn't realize that her father was dead already. I didn't realize that the snake was dead already. Therefore, again, the neder was made on mistaken pretense. And therefore, again, the neder is void. So I will say, fundamental machlok is in Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan, how to understand the case of the Mishnah. According to Rav Huna, Rabbi Meir's case is a case of making a neder al tanai, essentially. You're making a tanai. Like, I'm not going to go into the home because there's a rabid dog. I'm not going to marry this girl because her father is evil. And therefore, again, it's clear. If the circumstances change, the neder is void, even without going to a chacham for revocation. So the father dies, okay, the neder is no longer there. Dog dies, neder is no longer there. I don't have to go to a tam chacham for revocation. It's voided on its own. Rav Yochanan says, no, that's not the case of Mishnah. The case of Mishnah is not a case of nidre ta'os, but rather what? Not a case of nidre t'nai, but nidre ta'os. Where literally, again, I'm making a neder on mistake with mistaken information. I think her father's alive, but he's dead. I think the dog is alive, but he's dead. Therefore, because the neder is made with mistaken information, once I realize my mistake, ultimately the neder is voided. To which the Gemara says, Masiv, Amadeus, Masiv, Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba raises a kasha. Rabbi Abba raises a kasha. So, Konim, Shini, no, Selaphonis, Kura. Also, listen to this. Somebody suggests a shidduch to me. And what happens? Somebody suggests a shidduch for me. And I said, I'm not marrying her. She's ugly. say, we're not sugarcoating it over here, right? I don't like her midos, whatever it is, right? So what happens? I'm not going to marry that girl. She's ugly. So what happens? And then what happens? Then I see her. And in fact, she's not ugly, right? She's very beautiful. So, or shchora bahari levana. So they told me she has a dark complexion. I want to go with a light complexion. Or kitsara bahari yaruka. Or I'm not marrying her. She's too short, but indeed she's tall. So we'll say, so in all of these cases, what happened? I made a neder not to marry a girl because of certain physical qualities I thought she possessed. And then what? And then it turns out that when I see her, she in fact does not possess those qualities at all. So what's the halacha? Mutarba. So we'll say, so this actually is a pretty simple case, right? It's a mistaken neder. It's a mistaken neder. So I'm permitted to marry her because, again, I made a neder based on mistaken information. Therefore, once I realize my mistake, the neder is void, to which the Gemara says, mutarba. Lo mipnei shekura v'na'ase banah. Not because she was ugly and now she became pretty. Meaning it's not the pshat that there's no love. Or shchora v'na'ase levana. She was dark complexion, now she became light complexion. Or kitzara v'na'ase aruka. She had a growth spurt, right? She was short and now suddenly she's tall. That's not the reason why my neder is void. It's not because of no love. Rather, why? Ella shahaneder tos. Rather, because my neder was a mistake. Right? My neder was made on based on mistaken information. Now, again, I understand the mistake, and therefore the neder is void. So also listen to this. So we'll say, so according to Rav Huna, this price makes sense. Why? Because we also remember, how did Rav Huna interpret our Mishnah? Our Mishnah was a case of Tanai. It was a case of Tanai. I'm not going into the house because there's a rabid dog. I'm not marrying the girl because her father's a Rasha. Fine. Father dies, dog dies. So the Tanai ultimately, again, is voided. The whole thing is voided because, again, the reason for the neder is voided. So according to Rav Huna, the Mishnah and the Braisa both make sense because you're teaching me two different things. Dharanasek taught Rai, Tana Tala Nidra B'davar, because our Mishnah teaches us the idea that if you make a neder with a Tanai, once the Tanai ultimately, and Tanai maybe is the wrong word, but just say when I hinge my neder on a certain reality, and that reality changes, that the neder is void. That's what the Mishnah teaches me. Vitana neder tells. And the Braisa teaches me when I make what the halacha is when I make a neder based on mistaken information. So I understand why I need the Mishnah and the Braisa. El Rabbi Yochanan Damar Kvar Nes, or Kvar Asa Tshuva, Lamali the Misne Tre Zimni neder tells. But what's the Kvar Rabbi Yochanan? It's a Kasha. Because Kvar Rabbi Yochanan, what's the case of the Mishnah? Kvar Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah is a case where what? Where I made the neder, I'm not going to enter into this house because there's a rabid dog, or I'm not going to marry the girl because her father's evil. And then what do I find out? What do I find out? I found out that the father's already dead at the time that I made the neder. Or the dog is already dead. In other words, it was nidre tos. It was a mistaken neder. So according to Rav Huna, it was according to Rav Yochanan, the shaila becomes, that means the Mishnah is teaching me that if you make a neder based on mistaken information, the neder is void. What is the price of teaching me? That if I make a neder based on mistaken information, that what? The neder is void. So according to Rav Yochanan, I have to ask myself, why do I need the Mishnah and the Braisa to teach me the same halacha? To which the Gemara says, Kasha. You know what? That is an excellent question. So we'll say again, what turns out is that the Shita of Rav Huna holds up both in the Mishnah as well as the Braisa. The Shita of Rav Yochanan ultimately only holds up in the Mishnah, but the Braisa poses a Kasha, says the Mishnah. The oath of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says the following. Post Chilomina Kasov Sheva Tarabas is another interesting case. So Rabbi Meir says, remember, this whole chapter is devoted to methods or mechanisms by which we're able to revoke nidarim. So one of the ways we can do that is through a pesach, through an opening. I will say, what opening usually means is we tell the vower, had you realized this piece of information at the time you made the vow, would you have still made the vow? If the answer to that question is no, then we've just created an opening for revocation of the vow. So Rabbi Meir introduces to us another idea. You can also create a vow through what? Through minakasa sheva Torah, through that which is written in Torah. What does that mean? But omimbo, we can say to the vower, ilu hayisa yodea, had you known, sha'ata over alosikom alositar, had you known that through your nether, you were going to be in violation of not taking revenge or not bearing a grudge. That was the case over here. So the Rush explains the case over here is I make a neder that I'm not going to lend anything to my neighbor. Now, why am I making that neder? Why am I making that neder? Because he didn't lend me something. I went last week to borrow his snow blower. I figured he's not going to be using it much in July. So I go over right to go out and buy, and he says no. See, he comes over to me next week to ask to borrow a cup of sugar. I say, I make a neder not to lend you anything. Do you know why? And you want to know why? Because you refused to lend me something when I asked you. So what's I say? That, of course, is a biblical prohibition of the come of taking revenge and also ultimately of bearing a grudge against another. So now what happens? So now the Beis Din says to me, had I known, if you would have known at the time you made the neder that you were in violation of not taking revenge or not bearing a grudge, or and also you're in violation of not hating your brother in your heart, and you're also in violation of of loving your fellow like you love yourself, and in violation of if your brother is really in need and now you're not going to give him, you're in violation of sustaining your brother, because let's say he's poor. So, and now because he's poor and you made this neder, you cannot support him. So listen, so what's this? Essentially, listen to this. So now I made a neder not to give to the other. Why did I make a neder? No, not to lend him anything. Why? Because I'm angry at him, because he did not lend me. So now what happens? So I come to Beis Din, I want revocation. And Beis Din says, okay, had you realized at the time you made the neder that you would have been in violation of all of these halachas, right? You're taking revenge. You're bearing a grudge. And by the way, let's say he's poor. Let's say my neighbor is really poor. So now because of my neder, I cannot go ahead and give him tzedakah. Literally, again, if I made an edit, I can't give him tzedakah. So had I, so Beis Din says, had you known all of this, would you have still made the neder? And I say, no, chas v'shalom, had I realized that I was being in violation of all of these prohibitions, and had I realized that as a result of this neder, I would not be able to give him tzedakah, I would have never made this neder. What's the halacha? Harei ze mutar. So mostly that's a valid Pesach. That is a valid opening, ultimately, again, for revocation of a vow. Says the Gemara, only Rav Huna barav katina l'rabbanan, neima. So mostly listen to this. So what's interesting about this last piece is, the Mishnah says like this. If it turns out that my neighbor is poor, and now I made a neder, and therefore, again, I can't give him tzedakah. So that's the Mishnah says, that part of the Pesach is, had you realized that you can't support him, even though he's an ani, would you have still made the vow? So listen to this. Amar Rav Huna bar Rav Katina l'Rabbanan. Neima called the ma'ani, lav alai nafil, my demati li l'parnaso, v'hadi kuli amam ha'parnas alai. So listen to this. I can say to the Beis Din, the Beis Din says to me, but you can't give him tzedakah. So I can say, who says that the obligation to give him tzedakah is on me? I don't have an obligation to support every single ani. You know what I'm going to do? I'll contribute ultimately again to the communal tzedakah fund and let the communal tzedakah fund go ahead and take care of it. Meaning, why is the fact that I can't give him tzedakah, why is that a Pesach? Why is that an opening for the revocation of the vow? I could go around it and say, I'm going to give tzedakah. All right, I'm not going to give it directly into his hand, but I'll give it to the communal fund and let the communal fund take care of him. Well, so the Gemara gives an amazing answer. The Gemara says, Omer lo, we say to him, Kol hanofel eino nofel lidei gabay tila. We'll say, listen to this. Before a person comes to the community for tzedakah, there is an obligation for individuals to try to step up. We'll say, it's an incredible yisod. That before, yes, the communal fund is absolutely there. But the way it works with most people is before they go ahead and have to approach the communal fund, they're going to first turn to their friends and their neighbors for help. That's like the first line of tzedakah assistance. Those who know you, those who care about you, your neighbors, your friends, your family. Therefore, again, even though the guy can say, I'm still giving to the communal tzedakah fund, we say to him, look, but you know that when your neighbor is in need, he probably will come to you first. Therefore, as a result of the neder, he won't be able to come to you. Had you realized that, would you have still made the neder? If I say yes, then the neder is still in effect. But if I say no, had I realized I wouldn't have made the neder, that would be the Pesach, that would be the opening for revocation. Says the Mishnah. It was another interesting case. Poschin la'adam b'ksuvas ishto. So I say, here's another Pesach. We create a Pesach, an opening for revocation, based on the ksuva of one's wife. Now, remember, what's the idea? What's the idea over here? That, well, actually, we'll see in just a moment. We create a Pesach for a ksuva. What does that mean? So we'll say there was once an episode of a man who made a neder precluding his wife from getting any hana from him. Now, we'll say, if a man makes a neder that precludes his wife from getting hana from him, that then that is grounds for divorce. Because he's forbidden, because remember, intimacy is prohibited and any other form of benefit. So obviously, it's not a sustainable marriage. So a husband can make that type of neder, but he's obligated to divorce his wife and to go in and pay her ksuva. V'haysa ksuvas a tav dinyarin. But what happened? One problem, we'll say, see, then he realized that to get divorced costs money. and she has a ksuva of 400 zuz. And that is a big ksuva. Remember, a normal ksuva is 200 zuz. So she's got a very big ksuva, 400 zuz. So what happened? The husband came up for Rabbi Akiva, and I guess he was kind of looking for an out of not having to pay the entire amount. And Rabbi Akiva said, no, you can divorce her. That's your prerogative, but you have to pay her her ksuva. Amar lo Rabbi, so the husband began to plead. He said, Rabbi, I don't understand. Ches meos dinarim hiniach li, hiniach abba. My father left our family an inheritance of 800 zuz. And what happens? Achi, not to Achi, dalet meos, va'ani dalet meos. My brother took 400, and at least 400 for me. Lo daya shetitol hi masayim va'ani masayim. Why can't I just give her 200 zuz, which is a basic suva, and then I'm left with something? In other words, that the guy is pleading poverty to Rabbi Akiva. Essentially, if you go in and you make me pay her the full suva, I'm gonna have nothing left for myself. Amar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, I don't care. Afilu ata mocher se'ar roshecha. Even if you have to sell the hair off your head, ata nosin la ksuva. So you must pay her her ksuva. So listen to this, Rabbi Osai. Amar lo. Ilu hayisi yodea shehu came, lo hayisi noda. So what does the husband say? Right, well, you know what? Had I known this, I would have never made the nether. Real romantic, right? Had I realized how expensive it would be to get divorced, I would have never made the nether to begin with. And therefore, again, v'hitira Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was matir the nether based on this. What he's saying is, again, at the time he made the nether, so he obviously just didn't want to live with this woman anymore. He didn't think about the financial ramifications. Then what happens? Now that he realizes the financial ramifications, had I known how expensive it would be to get divorced, I would have never made the nether to begin with. Rabbi Akiva says, okay, that's a valid Pesach, and ultimately, again, voided the nether. Says the Gemara, so metaltuli, mi mishtabdi liksuva. So once I ask the Gemara, I don't understand. So first of all, what's interesting from this statement is, it sounds like that metaltuli, immovable property, ultimately are encumbered by the ksuva. Because what did Rabbi Akiva say? Even if you have to sell the hair off your head, right, you have to pay the ksuva, which sounds like you sell anything and everything, even your movable property, to go out and pay the ksuva. To which the words Amar Abaye karka shava ches meos dinar. Well, say not only that, by the way, but remember, I'm sorry, besides the hair, he also says that my father left us money. Money is movable property. So Asan and Rabbi Akiva is ordering the husband to pay for the ksuba from the money. So we see from here that movable property is encumbered by ksuba as well. To which the Gemara says, no, what's the case? Amar Abaye, karka shave ches meos dinar. It was land that ultimately was worth 800 dinar. And therefore, again, we're dealing with real property. I v'hak tani serosho, the serosho matatli. But Rabbi Akiva is saying, you have to sell the hair off your head, and the hair is movable property. This is what it means to say. So Rabbi Kiva was saying was like this. No. You have to pay. You have to pay her. And you have to pay her from whatever you have, from all real property that you possess. And even if that means you're left with nothing, and the only item of value you have is your hair, you'll sell your hair to go ahead and feed yourself. Right? Meaning her ksuva comes from all real property. But if that means you divest yourself of all real property and all you're left with is metalta, movable property, then you know what? Sell off your movable property and sustain yourself. Let's just finish this quickly. So Shamas Mino, we learn from here in Misajin Labalchov. This is a very important episode. In Misajin Labalchov means like this. I will say it's incredible. We're not going to do this justice, but we'll do it quickly now. Misajin Labalchov means like this. Let's say somebody owes money. And you know what? They don't have enough money to go ahead and pay off their debt and also live. Right? I owe Reuven $1,000, and Mamash, like, I have $1,000 left to my name. So the shaila is like this. Misajin Labalchov means, look, we halacha believes I have a right to live. So you can't take all of my money and pay it off to my creditor. Rather, I'll pay my creditor something, but I have to keep something for myself. The Imam says, you see from this mission that that's not the case. You see from this mission that when you owe money, pay your debts. And even if what? Even if it leaves you with nothing, that's your problem. Where do we see that from? From the fact that Rabbi Akiva says, you've got to pay your wife's ksuva, and even if what? Even if you have to sell the hair off your head to sustain yourself, then that's what you have to do. But you see from here that we don't worry about how the debtor is going to live. If you owe the money, you need to pay your debt. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak, Lomar Tapav Samet Vav, no. Lomar Shin Mekarin Shtar Ksuvasam. No. It doesn't literally mean that we make him give away his last penny. No, we understand that a person has to be able to live. And therefore, I will say, if the creditor does not have enough money to pay his debt and also just to feed himself, we don't make him give away his last penny in order to pay the debt. But I will say, here's a very important episode. If somebody can't pay their debt, so we don't say to a person, you know what, pay what you can and the rest is forgiven. If you can't pay your debt, you take whatever monies you have available now to pay your debt, and the rest is what? The rest you owe. The rest you owe, meaning the havamina is that if someone is destitute, we'll take what we can right now and cancel the rest of the debt. Mashallah, that's not what halacha does. Halacha says you pay what you can now. Yes, you need to keep some money for yourself to be able to survive, but the rest of the debt, the rest of the chob, remains upon you until the point in time in which you can repay. All right, so we'll stop over here, and so we'll pick up with the Mishnah on above tomorrow. Thank you.